Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Kabaza, and for today, we get into a conversation about the state of the property sector in South Africa. This is a conversation that we've had a number of times on this platform and in many different guises. And for today, we are happy to be joined by one of the largest local players, that is Redefine, and we're just going to be chatting with them about some of the activity in the market and picking the brain of Andrew Koenig, who is the CEO, to get a sense of what's going on in the company, and also at the same time some of the initiatives that he is looking after as well. Andrew, greetings to you today.
Thanks for having me, Mudiwa.
So let's start. Usually people would say, okay, tell us about Redefine, what is it? But you guys are a property company, and some of our reporting as Business Day, we know that Redefine is a real estate investment trust that owns retail, industrial offices, logistics, and self-storage in South Africa and Poland. At the end of August, assets were valued at 96.8 billion rand. So instead of asking you what is it, we would be keen to understand, in 2024, what does your portfolio, what does your mix of properties, look like? Maybe as a way to get a sense from an investor point of view around how Redefine is thinking around this portfolio.
So Mudiwa, Redefine is what we would call a diverse property portfolio company. We have about 60% of our asset base here in South Africa, with most of that, about 40-odd percent thereof, being invested in retail assets. Just under 40% would be offices, and then the balance would be what we call industrial stroke logistics properties that are spread across the country, but located in the key economic nodes of Gauteng, Western Cape, and the greater eThekwini region. Now, we also have, in addition to that, for geographic diversification purposes, we've got about 40% of our asset base sitting in Poland, and most of that is invested in retail properties through a company that we took over about 2 years ago called EPP. That's the largest retail landlord in that region. Its GLA is about 1.2 million square meters. We are also invested in a logistics operation that we have built from scratch through development activity over the past 4 or so years. And that also has a gross lettable area of about 1 million square meters of space that we rent out. And we've just started a new sector called self-storage. It's established quite well here in South Africa, but in Poland, it is undeveloped. And that's where we see a great opportunity to create a new asset class with good growth prospects over the long term. It is in its infancy. It's a small business, but we believe it has the capacity to grow. But for all intents and purposes, we are a South African company. We employ about 500 people here in South Africa that manage the operations, and we then provide financial and strategic input into our Polish operations, where we have about 200 people working on the ground in that region for us. So what I'm trying to say is, without people on the ground, without passionate, invested, engaged, and culturally aligned people with similar values, you cannot manage your properties to their best possible potential. You need passion. You need people that are fully aligned to our strategy. And that is where it's absolutely important that we say we are people-centric. We really do mean that, because occupiers of space are our most important stakeholder. They're the people that pay our rent. They're the people that come to work every day. They're the people who shop in our shopping centers. And those stakeholders are vital for the vibrancy and the relevance of our real estate assets, not only today, but into the future as well. So from a relevance point of view, stakeholder management is absolutely critical, and that's where the people aspect very, very important. And that's where we need people that are running these properties as if it's their own, so that we understand on a proactive basis what their needs are, and we remain relevant to those needs.
We're definitely going to get into that, people aspect, just now. One of the things that we often talk about is the fact that at the end of the day, the economy is a collection of people. So the health of the people, the health of the individual family, unit, sort of gives you an indication of what the broader economy is sort of going through. But in the portfolio that you were talking about just now, perhaps on the mainly on the retail side, because that's where your portfolio is leaning. For someone who doesn't know, or for the uninitiated, do you perhaps have a couple of, I'm just going to call them headline properties, or the ones that people would, sort of know, the ones that are on the ones that are on the poster on the wall,
Yeah. Okay. So just a couple would be, for example, Centurion Mall. That's our biggest asset. Yeah. Centurion. Blue Route Mall, Kenilworth Centre in the Western Cape. We've got the South Coast Mall on the East Coast of South Africa. And then we've got Benmore Shopping Centre here in Johannesburg, Bryson Shopping Centre is another one. We've got a 50% share of Maponya Mall, but a 50% share of the East Rand Mall. Just to give you a couple of the larger assets that we own, Matlosana Mall in Klerksdorp is another one of us.
Okay. And on the office side?
Office side, we have a number of trophy assets. Alice Lane is our biggest or second biggest asset, our biggest office asset. Yeah, Sandton, 90 Rivonia, it's the home of Weber Wenzel. It's just behind Sandton City that belongs to us. We have next to it two Pibus, which is it's an advocate's chambers. We've got the Rosebank Link building. That's our iconic building just off Oxford Road in Rosebank. We've got Rosebank Towers just down the road. It was our previous head office. And then we've got a number of properties similarly in Cape Town. Standard Bank Towers, for example, in the foreshore. We have Wembley Square, also in Cape Town, just to give you an example. And then we've got a number of other office assets spread across all nodes, from Centurion right through to Bryanston, Jan Santon, and then obviously Rosebank as well.
All right. And I brought up the office spaces because one of the conversations that we've had quite a bit on this platform. Obviously, we spoke more about this in 2021 and into 2022, was people grappling with, work from home. And at least on the outside looking in, you would think that, everyone is now working from home. Property companies are tanking, at least in the office space, things are not well. Because in our own environment, we have a relatively, large building in Parktown, and work from home, it's not as busy as, what it was, at least in our section of the building. But more on the broad level, I guess it was just to check, it's sort of a pulse check to say, has the work from home trend or remote working, hybrid working really affected? Because I think now we're sort of getting into those longer timelines where you can sort of make a more educated assessment of what all of that stuff has done on things like your occupancy rates, and I guess even just an appetite for a company to have some type of an office presence.
So Madiwa, yes, look, an office presence, I think, is absolutely imperative for any business. You need to have a place you can call home for all your staff. From a cultural point of view, from a transfer of skill point of view, from just a productivity point of view, you cannot beat the office over the long term. And I think that the working trend here in South Africa certainly has settled, as you were alluding to earlier. Hybrid or kind of policies, I think, are the norm now, where most companies are, allowing staff to work, say, remotely twice a week and expecting them to be in three times a week, depending, obviously, on workload requirements and the type of work that they do. So clearly, for some industries, working remotely does work. But if you have a business where you are cultivating a certain culture and where you are transferring skill and you're making use of more junior staff to do the menial tasks and to free up, you know, the more expensive resources, like lawyers, for example, to do the thinking work and so forth, you need that ecosystem to work. So I don't believe that there is that mass exodus where everybody now has decided that they will be permanently working from home. There is that balance that has come back. And what we are finding is that clearly Wednesdays and possibly Thursdays are popular days to be at the office. People need to be accommodated in space that is actually more spacious than it was prior to COVID. So you find that a lot of the office occupiers need to, you know, make provision for that peak period. And that is beneficial to us as landlords, in that they're actually looking for meeting rooms and not that battery chicken kind of open plan office space anymore, but to give people more space so that they are comfortable sitting in meetings and sitting next to their colleagues and so forth from a health point of view. So I believe that trend of everyone suggesting that the office is no longer the place to work and you can do it from anywhere, I think that is reversing. I mean, you're finding a lot of senior leaders in commerce complaining, you know, about the productivity and especially culture, starting to kind of, you know, fragment as a consequence or disentangle because of that lack of closeness. And I think what we will find over time, people will come back more regularly than they perhaps allowed to in terms of the hybrid policy because of loneliness. I think people feel isolated. And also from a promotion point of view, a lot of people who are working extremely hard remotely get overlooked in terms of progression within their companies. Because unfortunately, you know, managers, if they don't see someone, they automatically assume the person isn't working as hard as they possibly could. It's a perception. I know it's a very unfair one, but it is what happens. And as a consequence, you know, these people get excluded or people get left out of conversations that happen around a water cooler. And then, you know, they're out the loop. And when they get back to the office, they feel isolated and perhaps marginalized. So I think that fear of missing out factor also will drive people back to the office. We are very bullish on people returning to the office. I mean, yeah, we can see it even at Breederfine where, you know, people who are able to work 2 days a week from home are generally not because of that lack of being included or as a consequence of not being present. So I think it's going to go its course. It will run its course. There will be industries or perhaps you know, professionals who can work remotely permanently, but I think that's the minority, it's not the majority.
I like the fact that you know, you're teasing out, you know, a lot of these dynamics, because I think they do speak quite a bit into, I guess, the social psyche. That connective glue that binds people together, and I guess the evolution of how people react to each other. The fact that you and I can be talking to each other remotely, but there's still something to be said about, you know, sitting in the same room. I'm not shy about saying that I am a geek. I am here for technology. So, you know, my brain leans more towards hybrid work environments, but I cannot deny the impact that, real world human interaction has. And I wanted to maybe pick your brain a little bit, because you spoke a little bit about how you guys are doing it at Breederfine, and to get a sense of has it really changed for you guys? Because property companies, I think, were one of the companies that over years, even, right, you have a huge part of, let's say, even your sales staff that you would prefer not to be in the office. They should be out there, selling and that type of thing. And I guess it's just in such an environment where we have all of these discussions, You know, what can everyone else learn, you know, from property companies? Because somehow you're able to engender culture, but, you know, have a significant portion of staff going out and, you know, interacting with clients, visiting sites, making sure that buildings are still, you know, occupied and, you know, well taken care of, all of that.
Look, you're absolutely right, Madiwa. You can't manage property from a computer screen. You have to get off your chair and walk the property. You have to interact with those users that I was speaking about earlier. And the only way to do that is to be there in person. You know, you can rely on others to do it for you, but I think if you don't see it for yourself and get the feel and the buzz of the space that you're in, it's very hard, you know, to make strategic choices. So, yes, I think working from a base is important, but equally, you mustn't, you know, chain people to their desks. And I think that is important, to have that flexibility and trust that when someone isn't sitting behind that computer, they actually are performing a task or doing something that is in the best interest of the company. And I think that's where clear KPIs are so important, so that everyone understands the outcomes and give the individual the freedom and the space to actually execute their own. And that is where clarity is absolutely important, so that people understand the outcome that is required. But then, as I said, they need them to have that trust placed in them to enable them to execute as they see best how to. So we're not micromanagers. That is not going to be, you know, a very effective way of managing and getting that diversity of thought into every aspect of what we do. You do need people to be able to express themselves authentically, so that we can get to the real kernel of what matters most and how most effectively to deal with whatever challenge there may be. Because within property, there are always issues. There's always challenges. And very importantly, there's always opportunity within every challenge, so that you need those people to be free to think and free from being boxed into a way of thinking, so that they are able to come up with innovative and new thinking and how can I say, reimagine thinking in terms of how the space can be most appropriately positioned for the changing and the sort of ever evolving basis from a user needs perspective, I'm speaking.
Andrew, I understand that one of the things that you've been driving is a platform, around CEOs connecting, with each other. And one of the things I was curious about is this discussion that we're having about, you know, remote working and all that. Is that still on the agenda? You know, is that still something that CEOs are concerned about, still talking about, or is that now, you know, something that has already been put to rest, at least on a leadership level?
Okay, so Madiwa, my intervention is more CEO sessions with our staff, it's with our people, first and foremost. And yes, it can grow into perhaps being more broader. But if you look at it, particularly in the real estate sector, for the past 4 years, we have been trapped in a state of limbo. You know, we've had not only the pandemic to contend with, we've had civil unrest that came into our lives. We dealt with the energy crisis, and we still are, as you know. High inflation has come as a consequence of the pandemic coming to an end, and then we experienced elevated interest rates. We've had extreme weather events, particularly in KZN, as you know, and more recently in the Western Cape. And also these wars, the Russia and Ukraine war, as well as the Israel and Gaza situation, that has caused a lot of uncertainty within the real estate sector. And it has caused people over the past 4 years to really dig deep for resilience and endurance to deal with all of these issues that are impacting real estate particularly. So, as you know, resilience erodes mental well-being, and endurance defeats energy and focus. So what I embarked upon was a process to sit with every staff member within Redefine, not to talk about our KPIs and our daily chores and challenges, but more to talk about what keeps us awake at night, what can we do to relax, to turn off when you leave the office or the workplace or the properties you manage, and also to share personal challenges that we overcame. And all of this was intended to share with our colleagues to see how we could find areas of focus for us going forward that we can all learn from each other, get inspiration from each other, but very importantly, see how we can become more optimistic. Because I think in this environment, we need to be very, very mindful of optimism and seeing the opportunity in every challenge rather than always complaining about if the government did this or the politicians did that, or there was some calamity that came our way, but rather see how we can take ownership of our challenges and work with the problem, see it for what it is, get to the root cause, and come up with a solution that we can actually control our ecosystem. And that is what we've been working on. So there are four pillars that have come out of all of these conversations. I had about 22 of them with all the staff, about 500 people I spoke to. And wellness came out on top. Mental wellness is a serious issue, and it's something we can all better manage. I think it's something most of us ignore. We've either been programmed through cultural beliefs or whatever the case may be to ignore it, but it is a real issue, and it's something we have to deal with, and it's something we need to manage on a proactive basis. Innovation is absolutely critical, and I think it's the small things that amount to great outcomes ultimately. And it's encouraging those small ideas to take root and grow into bigger plans that we are building on, encouraging, celebrating success. And I'm an accountant, so I'm very bad at this. I'm always there to spot the problem and not the success and celebrate that success. And I think people really need to sit back and take stock and enjoy something that's really been a good outcome. And then lastly, business efficiency. We, property company, we've got a lot of challenges. There's an ever-increasing electricity bill. Water, as you know, is scarce, but also expensive. And then rentals are a challenge. That's a very competitive market. So to make sure that our margins are preserved, we have to make sure that we are harnessing technology to the fullest extent. And that's what we're looking to encourage people through these ongoing conversations. And it's not just with me talking to the staff. It's actually with all our management and leadership and people in the business having to converse and to help people be optimistic and stay optimistic. Because let's be honest, you want to hang out with someone who's optimistic. You want to hang out with someone who's positive. And it's the same with doing business and coming into our spaces. No one wants to be in a space where you're going to feel that you actually are depleted. And I think that is what we are working on.
I'm curious to know then, Andrew, from the sessions that you've been having with staff, obviously, the wellness aspect, coming out top from the feedback that you've been having. But I wanted to maybe touch on the celebrating success aspect, because I think, there tends to be a little bit of ambiguity around that in corporate spaces. So, keen to understand what some of the interventions, you've perhaps come up with, to make that something that's part of the culture. And then also 500 people is a lot. How do you effectively make sure that you are addressing individuals, and not, because there's always that thing that happens when you're dealing with large scale, where sometimes people might feel like I'm just a number in a big space, that type of thing. Yeah.
Okay. So just dealing with a number of people, as I said, it's not just me talking to everyone.
Yeah.
It's initiated by me, but to take up the torch now and carry it's up to every one of our business leaders. And that cascading down the hierarchy of the business is absolutely critical to the success of this initiative. It's the only way we're going to be able to make it a sustainable intervention. And that is through everyone who has a leadership position in the business adopts this, which is the case. Now, When I'm talking about leaders, I'm not talking about just managers. All of us are leaders in some form. It just depends on the situation. And it's cultivating this as actually a culture that becomes ingrained in part of who we are, our DNA in terms of how we execute our strategic priorities, etc. And it's more a way of doing things, I think, than an intervention. So we've taken this CEO Connect session, and it was themed join the upside. Opting for the upside. And now it's actually progressing to joining. Where every staff member will be asked to sign a pledge to this, where they commit to being optimistic, to see the opportunity in every challenge. And I think that then links back to the celebrating brilliance and success. And this is where recognition is absolutely important. And I mean, everyone immediately thinks, oh, it's only about money. It's not always about money. In fact, very often, just simple recognition, thanks, and a public mention of the person's outcome that was extremely positive for the business is a very, very valuable and very, very well appreciated intervention. And I think for us, when celebrating success, sometimes our failures are as important as the success itself, because in the failure, we actually have learnings. And we encourage people to actually come forward and tell us about something that didn't work out, but more importantly, what did they learn from that? And how could others not fall into a similar kind of trap? And I think that for us, from a communication point of view, is absolutely important. So the communication is both ways. The success can only be celebrated if we know about it. And this is where we're encouraging, once again, participation, where people are sharing on an ongoing basis things that are happening within their properties, within the areas in which they operate, and how they've dealt with it. And I think it's those learnings that actually make us a better company.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's actually quite, I think, positive development, to have something like that. But like you said, I can imagine that it's probably something that, was quite an undertaking to make happen. Obviously, you've taken on others, so that they can carry the torch, and so that it's engendered as a culture. And, over time, hopefully just becomes one of those things where it's just incumbent on all leaders to make sure that, they're connecting with each other and the business on that level. Andrew, I want to land today's conversation, maybe switching back, to the property sector itself, but, maybe zooming out a bit to the economy. Where we began today's conversation was you giving us an idea of what the portfolio looks like. Especially your geographical spread, between South Africa and the company that you recently took over in Poland and what that looks like. And also, when you're talking about some of the things that are affecting people, interest rates, inflation, that type of thing, it's a huge thing right now. And we often talk about the fact that this is one of the few moments in our modern economic history where everyone around the world is grappling with the same set of circumstances. The issue of inflation, the issue of interest rates, is not something that's unique to SA. Everyone is, fighting this. But I wanted to maybe get your sense, looking at these two environments being South Africa and Poland, how those different forces, you see them, at play, affecting your business. Because I think sometimes, especially in South Africa, there's sometimes a mindset like, oh, things are so bad here. But, when you zoom out and you look at how people, businesses, organizations are operating in another environment with the same set of circumstances, you sort of begin to appreciate maybe, some of the factors in SA. So I guess it's to get your view on, a compare and contrast on the two environments.
So if we are comparing Poland and South Africa, we are comparing very, very different situations. Although, surprisingly, we had a very similar start. So around about 1990, Poland came out of communism. They had no food, for example, on their shelves. People used to take summer vacation jobs that used to make money outside of Poland, that used to make the same amount of money as they would make over a full year. And I'm talking about professional people in Poland. It was really, really bad in 1990. As you know, we came out of, you know, apartheid around about 1994. So we were 4 years behind them. But if we look at where we are versus where they are, we're in a very different space. And the principal reason is that Poland adopted an economic policy that they've stuck to throughout their period since they came out of communism. And it has worked for them. They've got an unemployment rate of circa 5%. They've got a country that hasn't skipped economic growth, even through the GFC. In fact, last year, they just passed, dodged, like all of us, a recession. This year, the economy will grow just under 3%, and next year, a similar percentage. But what they have that we don't have, if we contrast them, is people that are very, very well educated. Most people in Poland have at least 2 degrees. And as I said, most people there are working. Now, if you've got that kind of fabric, you have a very different kind of social kind of situation compared to South Africa, where we've got, as you know, the very opposite in terms of very high unemployment. And we've got a lot of despondency, especially around the youth who can't find work opportunities. Now, having all of that negative aside from a social point of view in South Africa, where we are actually doing very well is our business, from an operating metrics point of view, has largely stabilized. Those huge vacancies and stuff are out of the system. We're starting to see stabilization and improvement, something with market rentals starting to creep upwards, particularly around retail and industrial sectors. Offices are very, very challenging. But I must tell you that although we complain about offices here, we've got an oversupply problem as well as an economic challenge, which causes the office sector to struggle. In Poland, they have an office sector similarly that is struggling because of excessive developments that have come onto the market, basically flooding the market from a space perspective. So they've got a supply problem there, which is causing a lot of challenge for the office sector. But from an interest rate perspective, we are all carrying heavy loads as a consequence. And we all know that the inflation is sticky, so that we all thought at the beginning of this year that we could see interest rate increases quite quickly into 2024. Unfortunately, it's now looking, and I'm not being negative, but more realistic, that we'll probably see interest rates only at the very end of 2024, perhaps into 2025, all dependent on where inflation lands, which is a very big challenge for everybody, not just in South Africa only, but also in Poland as well. Also remember, Poland's direct neighbor is the Ukraine. They war with Russia. And when I went to Poland just after the Ukraine war began, you cannot believe the solidarity that the Polish people expressed towards the Ukrainians. In fact, every household took in a family from the Ukraine when all those refugees crossed over into Poland. A lot of them have now gone back or migrated further into Western Europe. But at one point, every family took in a Ukrainian family. And that is telling you how, you know, strongly the Polish people felt about the situation in the Ukraine. And I wouldn't imagine in South Africa we could do that. And that speaks to the fabric of the people there. So I think we can learn a lot from them in terms of sticking to economic policy that works, but very importantly, making sure everybody is well educated.
Mm-hmm. That's actually quite an interesting take. I wasn't aware, particularly around those education stats. You know, when it comes to Poland, and I can already, you know, begin to see how different the economic you know, makeup of the country would, you know, certainly be influenced, you know, by something like that. But also at the same time, you know, being next to a warring country such as the Ukraine, you know, is not doesn't do well, because we often know that neighbors, you know, affect us a lot. If a country next to you sneezes, you sort of catch part of that cold as well. Yeah, so it must be you know, quite an environment, but at least, you know, it has its own level of stability. And I guess, you know, from a South Africa point of view, you begin to be at least grateful that at least we're not, you know, operating in that region, albeit with our own idiosyncrasies, such as the unemployment situation. But things are going to go, you know, where they're going to go. Last thing on our end, Andrew. It's once again just that economic aspect. How are you thinking right now about growth and expansion, especially in an environment where capital is still relatively expensive?
So Madiwa, capital is not only expensive, it's also very, very scarce. So we're not looking at issuing shares at ridiculous yields, for example. Our forward yields are around about 12.5% to 13%. We've got a lot of debt already on our balance sheet, so we're not looking to expand by borrowing more. Interest rates are higher, and as you know, yields are quite challenging as well. So for us, it's looking at optimizing what we've got to the best of our abilities, extracting the highest and the best possible use out of every one of our assets, and where there are recycling opportunities, in other words, selling some of our assets that are at the end of the investment lifecycle with Redefine, we redeploy that capital back into assets that we believe are capable of sustainable capital and income growth. So it's more about refining and optimizing what we've got for now and making sure we are managing every variable under our control. Some of the issues at play, high inflation, interest rate policies, politics, all of these things are out of our control. We're not going to be distracted by these issues. In fact, these issues can actually confuse you and lead you to inertia. We'd rather manage what we can. So strategic capital allocation, sourcing capital very efficiently, managing our business, harnessing technology. All of these things are in our control, as well as, very importantly, culture. Building up our teams from a diversity point of view as well. And then lastly, from an experience management point of view, very, very important that every stakeholder's needs are fully understood and we are actually addressing their needs, as well as making sure that in return, they are addressing our needs of them as well. So managing the variables in our control, absolutely important. The economy has been under stress and will continue to be under stress for some time. We do know that. But we're not going to blame that for our destiny. We'll rather work on what we can and do that to the best of our.
So that's where we end off for today. It has been a really great discussion, just talking about property, you know, with Andrew, looking at the beginning about, you know, what the portfolio, you know, looks like right now. I think if I remember correctly, some of the numbers that he stated, we're looking at roughly 60-40 split in terms of geographies between South Africa and Poland. That's a country that they got into, you know, through an acquisition just a couple of years ago. One of the things that you know, Andrew was talking about, comparing and contrasting the two economies, is just the difference in direction that the two countries have taken, and we see, you know, some of that manifesting in how I guess a company like Redefine that has operations in the two countries, you know, experiences it. And one of the things that he mentions is the fact that you know, Poland has been good to sticking to its stated economic policy and executing on that over the years. We also talked quite a bit, you know, about work from home, hybrid, you know, what has, you know, that done? We spoke about it quite a bit during the COVID years, but now in this, I don't know if we can even still call it a recovery phase, we're a little bit more firm about, you know, where some of the trends are. And I I think he mentions the fact that at this point, it is important and they are seeing it coming through on the client side that, you know, companies have kept their offices. It's good to have, you know, that environment within which different employees, teams can cooperate, but at the same time, just making sure that there are structures in place to make sure that, you know, you can still have a culture and let people, you know, still go out, hunt and kill, you know, so to say, as is the case in a sector like, such as property. Also talking about the, I guess, the economic factors, how that's playing onto the market itself for the different types of property that a company like Redefine has, but also how all of that has affected employees, you know, because, you know, the direct engagements that he was talking about. You have an economy that's not only affecting customers, but is also affecting employees and, you know, how they are engaging. Some of the factors that he spoke about, I think wellness, you know, celebrating success, you know, some of the things that you are saying have been coming out, efficiency as well. How do they, you know, make sure that they do the best of their ability? So that's been it, you know, just ending off there, talking about the fact that at the moment, Redefine is sort of in a holding stage when it comes to their growth outlook, doing the most, you know, with what they presently have in terms of, you know, their portfolio and also the teams that they have in place. So that's been it. We're in conversation with Andrew Koenig. He is the CEO of Redefine Properties. Andrew, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Madiba, and all the best.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.